Welcome to the Real Estate Espresso Podcast, your morning shot of what's new in the world of real estate investing. I'm your host, Victor Menashe. This is the weekend edition where we interview notable people from the world of real estate investing. Today is no exception. We have a great guest all the way from Boise, Idaho. Welcome to the show, Shannon Robnett.
Hey, thank you, Victor.
Well, great to have you here. Now, Shannon, you're based in the Boise market. You're a developer, just like us. We're very active in Boise as well. And so I'm very excited to have this conversation because there's a lot going on in the marketplace. But before we do, maybe give a little bit of your backstory and how you got to this point in your journey.
Yeah. So, Victor, I've been in the construction and development space for almost 30 years. I grew up the son of a developer and a real estate agent. My mother was a third generation realtor. And we've been developing multifamily, industrial, office. I've done police stations, fire stations, schools, medical facilities. And over the last three and a half years, we've been syndicating capital because the partners that I was working with, I did a lot of partnerships and single check writers. We got to a place where we were just kind of outgrowing them. Currently, we've got about $125 million under management, and we've raised about $60 million in capital. And that's been in the course of the last 3 years.
Nice. We've certainly observed that in particular over the last 12 months, we've found the capital environment to be much more difficult than it was, say, last year. We raised a good amount of capital last year. We had a target to do a similar number this year. Frankly, I don't think we're going to achieve it because a lot of investors are uncertain. They're sitting on their cash. They're maybe keeping cash in reserve for the possibility of capital calls on existing projects, all kinds of different very legitimate reasons. What's your observation?
Well, you know, Victor, you've been in this game a long time, and you probably underwrite the same way that I do. When rates dipped and we saw such inexpensive capital out there, I didn't really adjust my underwriting because, you know, a temporary blip in the market, as you know, real estate is so cyclical that what's happening this year doesn't predicate that it's going to continue for your lifetime. And so we're finishing up on a 190 unit apartment complex that I underwrote at a 7% interest rate at our end finance and a sale at a 5.75 cap. I think we're looking at a 4.9 cap rate on new construction at stabilization, and we can still achieve a 7% agency debt. So we're, you know, while my underwriting doesn't look as phenomenal as somebody that's pencil whipped their spreadsheet to tell them magical things, I think consistency and experience is really what's showing in this marketplace. Because, you know, if you can underwrite a deal and it makes sense in the long term outlook, I think you're going to still continue to be successful, and you're still going to be able to raise capital. You're still going to see partners understand that. And I think that's important, especially in this environment.
Hands down, I agree with that completely. Now, the big question in a lot of investors' minds, first, of course, is safety. They've seen a number of projects run into trouble. They've seen a number of projects get put on hold. Maybe they face some capital calls. So they're certainly running scared. They don't even know if they can trust their bank. And we've certainly heard from a few investors saying, well, why should I take any risk at all? I can get 5% in T-bills and not even have to think, and therefore my money's safe. What's your response to that?
Well, Victor, as you know, buying a T-bill is anything but safe.
Exactly.
I'm trying not to just really start laughing. But, you know, the thing is, leaving your money in the bank, you can get 5% interest rate on that, but you don't own anything. You have a depreciating asset, cash, because you're losing to inflation. If you're in the market and you're active in the market and you're looking at deals and you're analyzing deals, there are still deals to be had. You know, we bought an asset in July. We're getting a 6% cash on cash. We'll do cost seg on it. You know, so being able to be active right now doesn't necessarily mean that you're being bold. You're still paying attention to underwriting. You're still looking at things pragmatically. You're still finding exits 3, 4, and 5 to make sure that your deals are solid. But at the end of the day, you've got the ability to get into a market that others are You know, there's a lot of inexperienced people out there that are having trouble, that, you know, have had major cost overruns. They've seen their interest rates climb 5% over what they projected. They're not able to fund these deals. And I really see that there's an opportunity now to do what experienced investors do, and that's buy solid deals. I know of a number of people who have absolutely executed perfectly on their business plan. Their problem is their lending, and that's causing them distress, but it's opportunity for others. And I think if you're just really going back to the fundamentals and paying attention to what history has taught you and I, you're going to find solid deals that are going to make sense. And if interest rates improve, you're going to be in a better place. And if you're, you know, doing the prudent thing and locking in long-term money, you've still got a deal that's going to cash flow and it's going to appreciate.
The last couple of years have also distorted the supply-demand picture in a number of markets. Certainly, Boise is one of them, where we saw a massive exodus, maybe from some of the coastal markets to the inland markets, people looking to get away from some of those denser urban areas to a little bit more of the outdoors in the valley and so on. And yet and there's still influx of population. Let's be clear, there's still growth in Boise for sure. But it's not the white hot situation that it was 24 months ago. How has that changed your outlook on the way you're looking at supply and demand?
Well, you know, we're not seeing that the influx is slowing down. In fact, I believe that the issues that people were moving away from the coastal markets for are being exacerbated by $7 gas and record homelessness. So we're still seeing, and this is why, you know, Victor, when I analyze a market, I look for two major components, and a lot of people look for one as their first component is influx of growth, and that's really important for sure. But the other thing that you've got to have is you've got to have a wage growth. You've got to see that people are moving into markets, and the average wage in the market is increasing. I heard recently of a migratory process where people are moving out of Florida that have been there for years and years, and they're moving to the Midwest because they can afford it. And they're moving into areas that aren't seeing wage growth. And I think that that's important, especially as investors, because wage growth means that we can have rent growth. I think that a lot of the markets, because of the supply and demand issue over the last couple of years that you just mentioned, have kind of topped out in rents because they're pushing wages too hard. A recent study that I read said that in the class C and D apartments, people are paying between 35 and 44% of their gross income just to their rent. And that's not really sustainable in a practical way. Class A apartments that we operate in, they're seeing nationwide, it's about 26% of their annual income, leaving a lot less delinquencies and things of that nature. So I think when you're analyzing markets, you want to look at the fact that you still need wage growth. Population growth is important, but you've got to see wage growth. Raleigh, North Carolina is putting up some fantastic numbers for wage growth. Tennessee, Nashville is doing excellent for wage growth. And so when you look at those things, I think that those are also important to consider.
So Nashville, yes, but say maybe Memphis, not so much.
Right. But there was a huge, you know, Victor, you probably know this, but, you know, Memphis was kind of one of the last markets to heat up for, you know, the retrades that we saw because of the inexpensive money. But Memphis has been a cash flow market for years and years and years because there's not the wage growth there. And when you see that, you know, people have gotten in, they paid a four cap for something. They got some short-term debt on it. Now they're having to reprice that debt. They're not able to push rents like they had anticipated, and they've got some real problems. When you're looking at areas like Boise, like Phoenix, Arizona, like Nashville and Raleigh, you're seeing the wage growth is digging some of these mistakes out for people because we're still seeing rents appreciate. Now, to be honest and to be fair, in the last 9 months, we have seen rates kind of slack off in Boise. But I mean, after 7 years of 12%+ rent growth, I think it's maybe time to give the tenants a little bit of breather. But I think that inflation is going to continue to push them in 25 and 26.
I think so, too. Now, you're not just a building owner and building operator. You're also a developer. We've seen construction prices fluctuate widely. We've seen lumber costs go way up and come back down. We've seen labor prices go way up and now become much more moderated. What are you seeing in the marketplace? Because I know you're continuing to build.
Well, yes, we definitely have to juggle that. One of the things that we're looking at is, and you know this from being a developer, one of the most expensive things in a development project can be your interest, especially at the rates that we're seeing. And so I'm not necessarily as concerned about labor prices as I am about bodies on the job. And so we've kind of used that to our advantage to not necessarily hammer on the subs for pricing, but hammer on them for schedule. And we're seeing that we can now rein schedules back in instead of things that were taking 23 months. We're able to pull those back into 19-month projects. And believe it or not, on an apartment complex, you know, you could be talking as much as $200,000 a month in interest. And so pulling 4 months out of your schedule because you're able to properly man the job again has done marvelous things for the bottom line. And it puts you to market quicker, which allows you to tenantize and stabilize and actuate on your business plan all that faster.
Yeah, I love that. And that makes a lot of sense. We, in fact, ourselves have been looking at some projects and saying, you know what, even though the cost of mobilizing a team is real, it costs real money to remobilize, are we in fact better off if we look at the cost of capital? Are we better off to phase projects and do multiple phases? That way we're not carrying that interest carry for as long a period on what might be a slower absorption period. Are we better off to phase it, take less risk, and ultimately save some cost? Have you looked at those types of scenarios as well?
Yeah. You know, one of the things that we do in our apartment complexes is once we begin construction, we put in for a plat and we put each building on its own lot so that we can, as soon as we receive occupancy in a building, as you know, Victor, you start your foundation guys and then they're followed by the plumbers. And, you know, there's always a lag between the first building and the last building. And I think some of the mistakes that can be made is if that's all in a phase, you can't occupy until the last building is complete. So you may be sitting for months with finished product that you can't tenantize, but by going through the process of recording a plat and putting each building on its own lot, you can get an occupancy permit for each building. So now you're able to phase your tenancy as well. So even though you're facing, you know, interest rates of 8%, 9% on construction money, you're able to start bringing in tenants that offset that. You're also able to temper your market where you're getting the momentum from, you know, lease up. When you started a new development lease up, you're always giving concessions, right? It's just part of the game. But as you're getting those concessions burned off and people are seeing more and more tenants in there, and they're also coming to the scarcity of this project is getting ready to be completely full, you're able to raise your rents. And so it does quite a few things to help you offset your interest cost and create that FOMO toward the end of the project, because you're not trying to lease, let's say, 100 units in a phase. You're leasing the last 12. You know, we've got 12 coming online that'll be available. We've got 24 coming online. And so it's a smaller bite at the apple, and it creates a little bit of sense of urgency.
I love it. Well, Shannon, if folks want to connect, if they want to learn more, what's the best way?
Easiest way to do that is shannonrobnett.com. All my socials are there. You can even actually grab 15 minutes on my calendar. We can get to know each other and see if there's something I can do to help you in your investment journey.
Awesome. Well, Shannon, love what you're doing. We're good neighbors there in Boise on a number of projects. And for the listeners at home, definitely reach out to Shannon Robnett at shannonrobnett.com. The link will be in the show notes. And in the meantime, have an awesome rest of your weekend. Go make some great things happen. And we'll talk to you again tomorrow.